What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the PFN Scouting Podcast. Ian Cummings here with my good friend Derek Tate. It is time. It is the podcast before the 2024 NFL Draft. I know Derek's excited over there. Derek is ready to go. First off, I want to thank you all for listening and staying with us through the entire cycle. It's been one that's had a few changes for us here at PFN. We've stayed going. We've kept momentum, and I think covered a lot of great topics in the weeks leading up to the draft. We got the Combine, the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, right? We had sleepers, big board reviews, top 10 positional rankings. So if you want to listen to any of those topics, feel free to circle back and see our thoughts, right? And hold us accountable if we're saying something different now, right? But, you know, it's a fun time of year. It's a very exciting time of year. And, you know, it's all culminating in the 2024 NFL Draft. First off, Derek, how are you feeling? I want to thank you, as I did before the podcast, but thank you for giving us top-notch content and work and your work ethic as well down the stretch here. But how are you feeling? We're I think, two nights out. So you ready to go? You a little nervous, anxious? How are you feeling?
Oh man! Well, anytime I get to share the mic with you, man, I always get some butterflies right beforehand. I'm getting to share the mic with one of the best in the business to talk prospects and NFL draft. Kind of feel like the Sione Vaki right now of the Pro Football Network. You know,
I like that
full time fantasy football analyst, but you know, moonlighting as a running back slash scouting contributor. So, I mean, this is what it's all about. This is what, you know, you do all this work for. You take a look at all these prospects, you crunch the numbers, you look at the tape to find out where these players land. And then you get to find, and then once you get that data, you get to project potentially what their role is going to be on day number one, where they start their NFL journey. So it's always an exciting time.
For sure. Absolutely. And we're going to have post-draft. We're going to have grades during the draft for every pick. So we will be prepared to give you that, the readers and listeners. And then we'll have a post-draft podcast next week as scheduled. But we will also have post-draft content analysis. Who came out with the best class? Who could have done a little more? Some of the biggest reaches on our board, but some of the picks that we're a little more intrigued by, right? We will have every base covered for you. And I want to emphasize, you've got 2 days left. Make sure you go over to the mock draft simulator, get your mock drafts in. We've only got two more days, and we won't be able to romanticize about our favorite fits, right? You know, your team will only come away with one of these guys. So if you haven't gotten your mock drafts in, head over to the MDS. Kent Lee Platy, the mastermind behind it, we just rolled our final player rankings update, so that is all set. Go over, and you can do it solo or with your friends with the multi-user MDS. Go over, get those mocks in, and keep an eye out. Once this draft is over, we will roll over to 2025, so you can keep doing the mock drafts. But let's get into the preview for the 2024 NFL Draft. We've spent months building the anticipation, talking about it in every which way. This podcast is going to be pretty much focused on round one, because that's where everything else precipitates from in the draft. And more specifically, the top five, the top 10, Derek. This is one of the more, probably one of the most unpredictable top fives and top tens that I've seen in the NFL draft, right? You know, you've got Caleb Williams, pretty certain that he's going to go number one, right? But after that, man, the Pandora's box just opens and it's anyone's game, right? Washington, are they going to take Jaden Daniels or Drake May? The Patriots are going to take whoever's left between those two, JJ McCarthy, or are they going to trade back, right? You know, Elliot Wolf said the other day, this pick is open for business, right? And that could be him just trying to keep his options open, right? Trying to keep other teams in the dark as to what his true intention is. But you look at that Patriots roster, and there is an argument to make that they might be, you know, better suited to trade back, acquire capital, strengthen the roster, and get a QB in 2025 or something like that. Obviously, you never want to kick the can that far, so often. You don't want to make a habit out of it. But there are so many different outcomes in just the top three alone. And then you get to the top five and the top 10, and it just kind of precipitates from there. How are you feeling about the top five, top 10, the top of the board in this class? It's pretty precarious, but at the same time, too, you have so many different angles to take into account.
The different scenario, I mean, it feels like you can, if you accurately predict trades, landing spots, players actually selected in the correct draft slot, should go fill out a lottery ticket or something like that, because there's a lot of different scenarios that just within the first 10 picks, maybe even the first seven, that feel like could really have a major ripple effect on how the board truly falls for the back half of the first round. I mean, I agree that I think Caleb Williams is going to be a Chicago Bear, but after that, the possibilities are really endless. I do think Washington is going to stand pat and take Jaden Daniels is what my gut feeling is. Whether you think it should be Drake May or Jaden Daniels, certainly that's a discussion or a debate, but that's what my gut is telling me. I live here in the DC area, and that's what the vibe and the feel is in this market. But the New England Patriots is one that is so intriguing. Because if you got Drake May or Jaden Daniels or JJ McCarthy on the board, and the Patriots have, I think, a lot of needs on this roster from top to bottom. I mean, I like some of their defensive talent, but they could use a lot of help.
And that's a good point. You know, it's more so on the offensive side of the ball, which is where you're going to be supporting that quarterback, right? So that's kind of where the concern lies with the Patriots. Would you rather, you know, invest picks to improve that? But I agree, you know, defensively, they're pretty good, and they got a defensive head coach. It's just the offense is still in dire straits, even after a couple of signings, a lot of work to do.
I mean, it feels like they've missed on pretty much every signing offensively, like as far as skill position players go for a while now. But, you know, let's just throw on our tinfoil hats here. I believe the Minnesota Vikings acquired that second pick from first round pick from the Houston Texans for the sole purpose to move into the top 10 and go get a quarterback.
Yeah.
I believe that that's what they're going to do. Is that dance partner going to be the New England Patriots, who could probably get an extra pick on top of that, not just 11 and 23 in this draft, but do they potentially get a future first rounder down the road from the Minnesota Vikings to, you know, move up from 11 up to number three and have their pick between whatever two quarterbacks in the top four are still on the board? I do think that that's a plausible possibility, but I do believe, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting that the Patriots are going to stand pat and take either Drake May or Jaden Daniels or JJ McCarthy. They'll take a quarterback at three, and then the real party starts at four, Ian. The Arizona Cardinals kind of are in the catbird spot heading into this draft. Maybe I'm wrong thinking that, but if there's a chance that four quarterbacks could be the first four picks in this draft class, and there's one left and the Minnesota Vikings have to get up there, is that where they ultimately make an aggressive move, or do the Cardinals trade with somebody else for them to move up and draft Marvin Harrison Jr., cough, cough, the Chicago Bears?
Yeah, it's going to be so fun. And you mentioned the Cardinals pretty much have the keys to the kingdom, right? You know, it's one of those things where, and Monty Asenfort has proven, he proved last year, like he's willing to work the phones and move around the board. And with that fourth pick, you know, with that fourth quarterback, assuming the Patriots, there's multiple outcomes here. Either the Patriots stand pat or they trade back, right? Whoever's trading up to three is getting that quarterback. So we know the quarterback is going at three. We just don't know who's going. But either way, if you're the Cardinals, you're most likely 99.9% of outcomes, you're sitting at number four with three quarterbacks off the board. And there's only one top four quarterback left. And that still, you know, plays into that equation of supply and demand. Hey, we've got to get up there and get this guy, right? And people have said the Chargers are a viable trade destination as well, which, I mean, I could see that if the Cardinals are willing to stand pat and take Marvin Harrison Jr. But man, this class is Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers. And we have heard that, yes, some teams have MHJ as their top receiver, but other teams, it's a lot closer between Nabers and MHJ, even Odunze and MHJ. Some teams have Nabers as their wide receiver one. I can't speak to whether the Cardinals are one of those teams, but taking that uncertainty into account, right? The consensus draft media, right? And, you know, I'm at fault here too. I like MHJ a lot. He's my wide receiver one. I would take him. He's a tier above Nabers and Odunze. As good as they are, he's above them for me. But I can't speak for 32 teams. I definitely can't speak for the Arizona Cardinals. So if they like Nabers and Odunze just as much as they do Harrison, there is incentive to play the board, trade down, get some capital. And, you know, the things that they can do with that capital is very exciting too. In my 7-round mock this past weekend, I think I had them trade back to 11, get 23 from the Vikings as well. And then they were able to trade back up to get Malik Nabers at 8. And then they got Terrion Arnold at 12, trading up again. So, you know, if you play your cards right, you can get a couple blue chip prospects. Or if you want to trade up once and keep capital down the line, that's good too. But there's so much potential energy that comes from the capital that they have, and they're incentivized to play around and kind of see what happens. So the Vikings, you mentioned it with the Vikings. I think they're probably the most likely candidate to trade to three or four. We know how desperate they are, right? Desperate is probably the wrong word, because they're ready. They're ready to have a quarterback, right? They're ready. The roster is pretty strong across the board. The defense can get a little bit better, but you have the offensive line. You have the supporting talent at wide receiver and tight end. You have all of the, you know, you have all of the, what's the word that I'm looking for? The supporting elements to right. You know, bring along a young QB and help develop them, right? So, you know, they're in position to be aggressive. It's not reckless for them. It's the final piece that they need. So, and I think you mentioned it too, 11 and 23 and their first rounder next year, that is automatically a really good package. That's a really good starting point.
Yeah.
They might need to add some sweetener to it to, you know, box out other teams. But if you're working with that as your baseline, I don't think you have to do too much more, right? And they don't have a ton of capital this year, so you might have to throw in some next year. but I think the Vikings are the most well-positioned to move up the board. And I think they're also the most willing. They're going to be the most aggressive because they're in the best spot. The Raiders are at 13, right? You know, they have enough capital, but you're moving up a little higher. You don't quite have the same amount of capital the Vikings have. The Broncos, I think that would be pretty, that would be kind of suspect with them. You know, they're always a tough team to mock for, but they don't have the capital to move up. And their roster, two QB needy teams, where I'm looking at the rosters and I'm saying, like, you know, if you did punt on a QB this year, I wouldn't be opposed to that. The Broncos and the Patriots, I think they both could stand to be patient if they wanted to. But at the same time, you don't always get in position to get a QB, particularly for the Patriots side. You're not always in position to get one without trading up. So a lot of factors that go into it. Let's circle all the way back real quick. And go to the Commanders, because it all starts with them, right? Who's left at number three, Drake May or Jaden Daniels? And the Commanders are the team that decides that. So you think it's Jaden Daniels that goes to number two. I want to ask you, you know, there's been a little bit of hullabaloo about that joined QB visit. You know, they all three went on to Topgolf. And
That's weird to me.
It seems like it was overblown, you know, but there was some talk about Jaden's agent making a fuss about it, right? Like, oh, you know, some of the things that the Commanders could have done, their conduct could have improved, right? You know, to me, that feels a little overblown just looking at it on the surface, right? Do you think that moves the needle at all in terms of Jaden Daniels or Drake May? Because it's not really a bearing on Jaden Daniels. It's more just kind of, it feels like noise, right? So Adam Schefter was on a podcast saying you can buy your Jaden Daniels jerseys, right? So he said that. But then at the same time, people who know Adam Peters and know how he operates have said that he's kept it close to the vest, that he hasn't told anyone. So that would, you know, insinuate that the leak is inaccurate and we don't really know right now. So you're still feeling Jaden Daniels. I can see it because of the scheme fit. Do you think any of this noise really matters, or it's really coming down to what we hear on Thursday night?
I believe it. I don't think the noise matters. Mm-hmm. When you conduct an interview at Topgolf, the way that the Commanders chose to go about it, and that's their organizational right, you know, certainly if anybody in Daniels' camp has any sort of issue with it, then so be it. But I don't think ultimately you're basing your decision off of that, you know, any sort of chatter or noise that comes from any critique of how they decided to conduct that interview. But it's more scheme fit to me when it comes to Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury and what the Washington Commanders are likely to want to do on the offensive side of the ball. That's why I believe Jaden Daniels is probably the pick. The only other potential tinfoil hat thing that happened this offseason that maybe could make you go, maybe they're clearing the deck for Drake May, is because Sam Howell was traded to the Seattle Seahawks, who of course was a teammate with Drake May back at the University of North Carolina. So I don't think it's a done deal by any stretch. I know Adam Schefter feels very strongly about that. I still think that there is definitely a possibility that Drake May is the pick at number two. I don't see J.J. McCarthy being the pick. Great prospect, but, you know, I don't see that being the consideration. I think it's between Daniels and May. And I do believe I'm leaning Daniels, but I'm not going to sit here and, you know, bet my mortgage on it or anything like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things too, like just anything in the NFL draft, right? Like I wouldn't want to bet anything on that because it's so unpredictable every year, man. But this year in particular, and I agree, I think there is a scheme fit merit as well. Drake May is, and it's funny that we're the ones talking about this because you go back to the QB checkpoint pod. You had Drake May as your QB3. I had him as my QB1, slightly over Caleb Williams, but there are varying opinions out there. You know, we've heard that teams are pretty split across the board. Some have Jaden Daniels in the mix for QB1 even, right? Some teams really like the upside with Drake May. So again, you wish you could peel back the layers and see who those teams are, because that would add so much more clarity to this discussion. But at the same time, then we'd have no reason to talk about it. So, you know, it's kind of a catch-22, but it's a fun outcome to explore for sure. And I am, you know, my gut tells me, it's tough, man, because I'm a big fan of Drake May. And if you want to go back, hear our thoughts. We talked about it in the QB checkpoint. We've got the scouting report up on site. Like I'm a big fan of the physical talent, but then also the flashes of, you know, anticipation, pocket navigation, right? I think in the right scenario, he can truly be a top five QB in the league. I'm a big fan of the talent. I think it's a good fit for the modern NFL, but so is Jaden Daniels, right? So, you know, there's trade-offs for each guy, but looking at what Jaden Daniels was able to do in his final season, right? Win the Heisman, but also the growth he showed as a passer, right? And the athleticism he provides. I look at him and, you know, in that Cliff Kingsbury spread derived offense, I think whoever you pick at QB, you can tune your scheme to fit their strengths a little bit, right? I think the best coaches are malleable, and they've shown they can, you know, build the scheme around the player as opposed to trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, right? You know, so you want to be flexible no matter what, but some players allow for more easy integration, right? And adaptability. And Jaden Daniels, you know, I would agree. I think, you know, if you had to pick a better scheme fit, I would say Daniels is probably a better scheme fit for Kingsbury. I'd say May is probably a better scheme fit for Alex Van Pelt in New England, right? So, you know, looking at that element of it, that's what comes into play. But let's assume Jaden Daniels goes to number two. So now you've got Drake May on the board at number three, and it could be Drake May number two, and then all of this is moot for us. But that's the risk we're running with the NFL draft and talking about it. So Drake May still on the board at number three. You got the Patriots, who could stand pat and take him. You've got the Vikings, who could compel them to move off that spot with a really strong offer. You've got the Giants lurking at number six, who allow the Patriots to kind of stay within range of JJ McCarthy if they want to make a slight trade back and get some capital, still get a QB. What are you feeling here, man? What box of worms does Drake May at number three open up? Because the Patriots have to choose whether they want to insert this QB, who, you know, is my QB1, but I'll be the first to admit, mechanically, there are some things he needs to work on. He's got the decision-making lapses that you do normally see from a young QB. And I will admit, you know, some of the best QB prospects that we've seen, some of the most exciting ones, have failed because they weren't adequately supported. And I look at the Patriots supporting cast right now. You still need a left tackle. The interior line is probably average at best, right? You've got a pretty suspect receiving core. You signed KJ Osborne, but he's nothing more than kind of a middling slot receiver. DeMario Douglas, Pop Douglas is a solid weapon, but you don't have the type of weapons that can, you know, command gravity from a defense and help make things easier on their teammates, right? So it's not a situation that's conducive to development right now. Could it be that? Absolutely. In 1 or 2 years? Yes. But Drake May is one of those guys, if you don't have the proper supporting structure on day one, you do run the risk of, you know, hurting his development a little bit. So what's your thoughts at number three? You know, try and put yourself in multiple shoes here. You got the Patriots, the Vikings, the Giants, even the Raiders, the Broncos, if they wanted to sell the farm, if he gets to that point, what are the outcomes that could come into play here?
Well, the most obvious is that they do select the best quarterback available, no matter who it is. Let's just, you know, stay with that. It's Drake May. And I do think between Drake May and JJ McCarthy, I do think Drake May is the pick. You know, you signed Jacoby Brissett for a reason.
Yeah.
I do think he could be a bridge guy. And I don't know if granted, we're not going to be there for OTAs and you know, in meetings and to really understand exactly how he's grasping all of these concepts and the transition from the college to the pro game. You know, we're not going to be in the room with him during the entire lead up through the NFL up to the NFL preseason. But I do think Drake May needs some time to clean up his mechanics. Can that happen and be accelerated very quickly with a kid that's, you know, fully devoted and flash the ability to be able to do it? Absolutely. But I do worry about whether it is Drake May or JJ McCarthy or Jaden Daniels, whichever quarterback the New England Patriots decide to select. You already touched on it. The supporting cast is not ideal right now for a young quarterback, in particular one who doesn't have all of his mechanics cleaned up and tightened up entering the NFL. I feel as if that could be a potential scenario where he steps into a situation that, like you already mentioned, hinders his development. And that's the last thing you want when you're investing that type of draft capital in a quarterback prospect like Drake May. I do think that they select him. I would be enticed, though, because if you like Michael Penix, or if you like Bo Nix, and you can move back to 11 and 23 with the Vikings, right, and collect even a future first to potentially maybe even reset the quarterback market next year or something of that nature, and just take best available to kind of retool that roster and just roll with Jacoby Brissett and maybe another prospect on day two or day three in this class, then those are options that are certainly available to you. I think the Patriots stand pat and take Drake May, but if I were the GM, if I'm getting offered three first round picks, it would be very difficult to pass up that opportunity to really restock the draft asset room for the New England Patriots to really retool this roster and accelerate that rebuild that I think we all know is on the horizon for the Patriots.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you bring up a good point. There are two scenarios for Jacoby Brissett. You know, either way, he's probably going to be a bridge quarterback. But in one, he's a bridge quarterback for a rookie who's already on the roster, right? So you can ease him into a starter. On the other hand, he's keeping the roster afloat while the team waits for a QB in 2025 because they don't take one early on. So, you know, there's two outcomes for the Patriots. So now I guess the thought experiment is, what type of offer would entice you enough to move off number three? Because, you know, with the picks you have, you can strengthen the roster, right? Like, you know, in my mock draft this weekend, I picked Drake May at three, Xavier Leggett at the top end of round two. Like, this is a strong receiver class. Let's not act like you can't get a guy round two, but you run the risk. There's a little more uncertainty, right? But, you know, if you stack picks, if you get Xavier Leggett in round two and Jalen McMillan in round three, say, and that's a solid receiving core all of a sudden, right? But it's coming at the cost of offensive tackle because you're not able to address that early either. So, you know, there's still a limited amount of capital that you're working with if you're the Patriots. If you pick a QB right now, if you want to leverage that pick into more capital later on, all of a sudden you've got 11, you've got 23, you've got two first rounders next year. So you can make a move up for a QB in 2025 if you want, right? So is that the offer that would compel you, right? I'd maybe need a little bit more than that, especially because I like Drake May a lot for sure. But, you know, I could be convinced, and especially looking at the Vikings, right? They got a need for a QB. They've got the supporting structure to help, you know, bring May along early on. And I believe, you know, you don't read into this, but there was that clip of Kevin O'Connell at that church function, I think, where someone actually asked about it. And he's like, I may or may not have sent a bouquet of flowers to Robert Kraft. So like he's trying to smooge him here, but no, it's not. You don't read into it. Right. But, you know, we've known for a while that the Vikings, if an opportunity arises, they are going to take advantage of that opportunity. They're going to capitalize on it for sure. So you want to be aggressive. You want to try and give them as much as they need to be compelled off that. What would it take? You got the first rounders this year. You've got the first rounder next year. Maybe an extra third rounder, maybe a second. What would be the threshold that would push you off the edge and say, yeah, we can push QB to next year?
I would say 11, 23, 2025 first. And maybe like the one, they also have the 108.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe even like a third next year or something like that. I mean, to move back, because you're passing on a chance to take a quarterback who I think, if this is Drake May that we're talking about in this scenario, we're passing on a guy that I believe has the ceiling to be the best quarterback in this class, and has all pro potential. You're going to have to pay a premium because we're passing on a position on the most important position of need in the sport. So you're going to have to pay a premium. I know it sounds like a lot because it is a lot, but yeah, that, so 11, 23, 108 this year, and then a future first and a future third, I suppose. I don't even know if the Vikings have a future third, but yeah, at some point. Yeah, give me two picks in next year's draft and give me three in this year's draft, including the two firsts, and then I'd be willing to move back to 11.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a nuanced discussion. Now the question comes, where does J.J. McCarthy go? We've got the first three QBs off the board, and we'll switch to other positions and teams in a couple minutes. But J.J. McCarthy, where does he go now? Because you've got, let's say, you know, either the Patriots or the Vikings take Drake May at number three. You know, if the Vikings are if it's the Patriots who stand pat and take him, I can see the Vikings just trading up to four and getting J.J. McCarthy, right? Because you get the prime real estate. The Cardinals are willing to make a deal. You get that guy. You know, you make sure that you're in the driver's seat to get him if the Patriots aren't willing to make a move. If the Patriots are willing to make a move, that changes things up a little bit because I don't know if the Patriots would trade back up after acquiring that capital. If you punt on those first three quarterbacks, maybe you're more inclined to sit with the capital that you have, strengthen the roster, and wait a little bit, right? As opposed to giving up most of what you got to get back up to four, five, or six, right? Yeah, and you got the Giants at number six as well, who can make a short trade up if they want to get J.J. McCarthy. You've got the Broncos and the Raiders as those wild cards. But to me, you know, the Giants are a threat that goes overlooked sometimes. Obviously, you know, the roster isn't in great shape. It's getting better. The defensive side is pretty good. You get out of corner, but you're generally in a solid spot. You got some weapons, but you need a few more. You could use some right tackle competition. And the quarterback, you run the risk of, you know, spreading reps too thin with having three quarterbacks who are taking reps, right? But there are risks to take JJ too, you know. So what happens with JJ? And you got two outcomes to go through here, but where are you seeing JJ going then if this plays out?
If we're playing this out and we say the Arizona Cardinals are going to trade out of the four spot, they've got a lot of draft capital though. And they've got what, 20? So 4, 27, 35, 66, 71, yeah, and 90. So they've got six of the first 90 picks, including three of the first 35. So they're in a very, very, very strong spot. They have a big need at wide receiver. And don't get me wrong, I'm not disparaging, you know, Michael Wilson or, you know, Greg Dortch or anybody else that's on that roster right now. I like Trey McBride as a tight end prospect too, but they really need an alpha wide receiver because they're staying with Kyler Murray. So I believe that the Arizona Cardinals don't want to miss out on that opportunity to get one of these three receivers. If you trade back with the Vikings all the way and you have the capital to move back up, if you really want to go and get Romo Dunze or Malik Nabers. But I think the ideal scenario is to trade back with the Giants, if depending on what the Giants are willing to give up to move up just two spots, because then you're guaranteeing yourself that you're getting either Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, or Romo Dunze. However they have their board situated, you're guaranteeing yourself to get yourself a wide receiver one for Kyler Murray, and you can pick up capital as well in the process. I think that that's, if the Giants are interested in investing in one of these top four quarterbacks because they don't believe in Daniel Jones and they're planning on moving off him past this season, if the Giants are willing, that's the route I would go if I were the Arizona Cardinals. Just pick up a little bit of extra capital, but make sure that you get one of these top flight wide receivers.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the advantage that the Giants have is that they are situated at sixth overall. So a lot of these teams at 11, 12, 13, you know, you gotta, you know, compel these teams a little bit more to move up. Whereas the Giants, you're still staying in range for a player that can really make a big difference for you, you know? And I think being in range or out of range of that big three, like I talked about, could be a pretty good swaying piece for a team like Arizona, which definitely needs that kind of talent at wide receiver. So a lot of variables in the QB discussion, and it goes even farther than that. You know, you look at the Chargers, right? Are they going to go wide receiver? Are they a threat to take one of those big three, or are they going to go offensive tackle, right? You know, Jim Harbaugh has been very adamant about improving the offensive line and investing in the offensive line. So what is going to happen with that? If Joe Walt's not there for the Titans, what do they do? Do they take one of the big three, right? So, and then you've got teams like the Falcons, the Bears, the Jets even. I feel like there's so many different outcomes for those teams. And, you know, that plays into, you know, some injury concerns as well. You got a guy like Troy Fitani, Amarius Mims, guys who could maybe be in contention for the Jets, but also might fall down the board because of some medical concerns. So sure, too many variables to account for, but we'll peel away from QBs for a little bit. And let's talk about the receiver class now, not just the big three, but some of the guys like Brian Thomas Jr. We're pretty certain that he's going round one, but after that, man, it gets pretty dicey. You've got Xavier Worthy, you've got A.D. Mitchell, you've got Jalen Polk, who's snuck into some first round mocks, which I'm very happy about that. I'm a Polk guy for sure. But then you got Xavier Leggett, you've got Keon Coleman as well, Ladd McConkey. The list goes on and on, but there are a lot of receivers who could sneak into round one. What the exact combination is, we don't know yet, but what are some fits that are kind of standing out for you, Derek? How are you viewing this wide receiver class right now? Because I don't know if the record's going to be broken, but there are a lot of guys who could sneak in and a lot of guys who could be considered in the top 32.
I think Xavier Worthy is going in the first round. I don't see a world where you run a 4-2-1 blazing fast. And I think he has more to offer than just being a straight vertical guy.
Yeah, for sure.
I really, truly do. And, you know, if we're talking about once upon a time, Henry Ruggs III out of Alabama, you know, was a bona fide first rounder in his own right. I don't see a world where Xavier Worthy is not a first round pick. I am very intrigued. The Indianapolis Colts decided to bring back Michael Pittman Jr. And while I like Josh Downs and I think he's a nice movable slot piece, I still am not the biggest Alec Pierce believer. I think he's done some okay things over his first two seasons, but I believe Xavier Worthy opens up the playbook quite a bit for Shane Steichen and Anthony Richardson to be able to give this offense a new vertical element that could really accelerate the growth. In particular, you're going to be, now defenses are going to be forced to pick their poison with Jonathan Taylor too. So, I mean, you got, you know, a dynamic dual threat quarterback, Jonathan Taylor, who is arguably the best running back in the league outside of Christian McCaffrey. And then, you know, Michael Pittman, who's a great movable weapon across, you know, anywhere across the formation. Xavier Worthy really, I think, helps give this offense a vertical element that could really pay dividends, and in particular with a very gifted offensive mind in Shane Steichen. So the Colts for me are the team that I kind of believe, even though they have a need at corner. I could see them going with a cornerback as well, but Xavier Worthy and his dynamic speed and verticality just really kind of feels like a decent landing spot.
Yeah, and it's fun to mock for them because you got Xavier Worthy as that vertical threat who I think really fits Steichen's scheme. You mentioned threatening vertically, but Brock Bowers is the big wild card in this discussion, right? Because, dude, like, can you imagine? I swear, like, I'm sure it was as early as, like, October where I was doing a mock draft and the Colts were kind of settling into that middle round range. And, you know, you look at Brock Bowers and you're like, in that offense, I can work with that. I can work with that. We got something cooking here. We're cooking with propane. So Brock Bowers to me, man, is one of those guys where it's tough to value him, right? Because he could be a top 10 guy. Some teams are very high on him. He could go to the Jets maybe. You know, the Broncos are a wild card. And real quick with the Broncos, we're probably both in agreement. Their best outcome is trading back, getting more capital if they can, and maybe getting Bo Nix in the 20s, right?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Him or Michael Penix, whichever you believe is your flavor, have them in the same tier. So trading back, getting capital, I believe is the right move for them. Because like you said, of all the teams that have the ammo to be able to move up into the top 10, yeah, the Broncos are really the worst candidate for that because they just are devoid of that plethora of draft capital and assets to be able to make an aggressive move to get inside the top five.
Yeah, you know, they're in a tough spot for sure. But I think that's the best outcome is hoping that someone, you know, falls to 12 where you can trade down and get capital, right? So, you know, they could take Bowers if they wanted to, but they're probably better served to trade down and strengthen the roster. The Saints could take Bowers potentially. Jawan Johnson had a good year a couple of years ago, but he's kind of, you know, faded off a bit. You might want that versatile weapon for Derek Carr, but at the same time, they really need to improve the trenches on both sides of the ball. Offensive tackle, potential holes at both spots. Edge is pretty suspect still, even getting Isaiah Foskey. So, you know, there's work to do on that side. So I look at the Colts at 15. I think there is an outcome and a pretty decently reasonable outcome where Bowers falls to 15. They could make a slight trade up for him if they really like him, but that would be a fun fit, man. I think Brock Bowers, Xavier Worthy, those are the two that I'm really salivating over. I think Brian Thomas Jr. would be a great fit too, but we don't really know where he's going to go either. Because you look at, you know, he could go, I think 20 to the Steelers is probably the floor for him. The more I think about it, I had him falling to 25 in my mock draft, but the more I think about it, you know, and the more I reevaluate my positioning there, he's my 17th overall player. You got teams like, you know, and let's say the Patriots trade back to 11-23. I could see them swiping up Brian Thomas Jr. early in round one if they want to make sure they get that, you know, X movement Z receiver with that upside. But, you know, he's one that could be in play for the Colts too. The Colts are just a big wild card, man. But Brock Bowers, that would be fun. I think that's his floor.
You know, you mentioned Brock Bowers and you say the Denver Broncos, and I think Sean Payton and Jimmy Graham, and he loves to have himself a tight end or a running back in that Joker role and just terrorize opposing defenses by creating mismatches. And that's what Brock Bowers is. He's a movable weapon at that position. And right now they traded away Jerry Jeudy. Sure, Marvin Mims is a nice prospect. And, you know, Cortland Sutton had a bounce back year last season, but that offense could still use quite a bit of juice in the passing game. So I don't know if I don't see Sean Payton, you know, kind of going that direction, but would I be shocked? I wouldn't, because I know what he's capable of doing with a dynamic talent at tight end. So the Broncos certainly are a team that's a little interesting, but if Bowers makes it to the Colts or to the Bengals, I could see a lot of fun things happening for Brock Bowers. A player his talent has no business really slipping into the teens, but if he does, a team's going to get an incredible value and a hell of a football player.
Absolutely. And I think the Colts are probably the gatekeeper there, right? Like, if you're the Colts and if you get win and the Bengals are trying to make a trade up to like 14 or something, maybe you want to make a move up to 13. The draft is pretty much just it's basketball, man. It's boxing guys out, getting to the rim, getting your guy. It's what it is, man. You're hooping out there. So, you know, you got to make sure you play positioning sometimes for players that you really, really like. And again, you know, how the board falls dictates how many options you have. Maybe you really like a couple guys and one of them can fall. But if there's only one guy that's really in that tier for you on your board, and we've mentioned it before, you know, as media evaluators, right, we need to take every prospect into account on our board. So that's why our boards are upwards of 300 players, even more than that sometimes, if we can get to that. But for NFL teams, a lot of times they have at most, you know, 150 players on their board, right? You know, because they're trying to exclude players. They're trying to see who fits all of the criteria for being a future Indianapolis Colt or a future Cincinnati Bengal, right? Or a future Pittsburgh Steeler. Who fits all of the criteria at this position? And a lot of players don't fit all the criteria. So, you know, these teams are, they're not trying to acknowledge how many options there are. They're trying to rule out as many guys as they can to narrow their focus and cast a shorter net, so they're more focused and they have a better idea of who they want to get. So, you know, it's tough to factor that in with the round one, right? Because there's so many talented players, but it's going to be a fun one for sure. I think the Colts, I think, you know, the Bengals could make a move up if they wanted to, but they could also stand pat at 18 and take a tackle if they want to. We know they got Orlando Brown and Trent Brown, but you could still get a long-term option there as well. So a lot of, and Byron Murphy II also potentially could be an option. Byron Murphy II is a top 32 guy on my board, but we've been hearing whispers that he could go as early as the top 10, the Falcons potentially, if they like him that much, right? Ooh. So that would be a little high for me personally, but he's explosive. He's got great torque. He's a good run defender as well. I can see it for sure. But Brian Thomas Jr., we mentioned him. What are some of the best fits for him? Because the Bengals, I don't think they have an immediate need anymore. I think they can focus on the trenches. T. Higgins is at least going to play under the franchise tag, it looks like. I mentioned the Steelers feel like the floor for him. But if you're a team like the Bills, who really need a wide receiver, right? You have a lot of day three picks, which those don't carry a lot of weight this early, but maybe you can stack a couple in tandem with like a second rounder next year or something like that. Who, if you're a certain team in the 20s, would you be willing to make a move up for Brian Thomas Jr.? And where do you think the floor is for him? Because he's kind of... And correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember. Is he your wide receiver four too?
He's my wide receiver four. Okay. Yeah. I definitely think the floor is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And while I think the Steelers have other needs, the trade, the departure of Deontay Johnson certainly opens up a sizable role in that passing attack that they need to complement to George Pickens, and Brian Thomas Jr. would be a fantastic addition. And they should run to the podium if he falls all the way to 20. Certainly
the Jaguars stand out as another.
The Jags are a team. You beat me to it. Look, Gabe Davis is a player. And they spent some money on him in free agency, and he has been a volatile producer and been in a pretty darn ideal situation with Josh Allen throughout his entire NFL career. And I think he's a good player. I think Christian Kirk's a very good player. Zay Jones is on the final year of his rookie deal. But if you're trying, I mean, I think that they really need to address the cornerback position. You know, Quinyon Mitchell is someone that certainly is on my board for them, very high on my board for them. But if Brian Thomas Jr. is there at 17, which he very well could be, that is a very, very enticing proposition, because we saw what the offense looked ish like with Calvin Ridley, but I Calvin really didn't play football for a while, and you know, had some issue with some drops. You know, I think Brian Thomas Jr. gives them a whole new vertical outside element that could, you like what you have in Travis Etienne out of the backfield too. And you haven't seen the returns, and the production and the development for Trevor Lawrence be consistent as you want it to be at this point for that type of prospect. And you can say Christian Kirk is a nice option. You can say Calvin Ridley is also still a nice player and can still create separation, but he hasn't really truly had a bona fide number one guy. And I do believe while Brian Thomas Jr. isn't a complete prospect entering the NFL, the physical tools are there for him to, I think, be able to create separation. I kind of liken him to a better version of DK Metcalf coming out of LSU. I just see a lot of movement skills and suddenness, curvilinear acceleration, things that I really, really like. Him as a vertical threat is just so exciting. Yeah. I'm talking myself into, if I'm the Jags, taking Brian Thomas Jr.
That's what we do here, man. We get on a roll and then we start to talk ourselves into it. And they're like, yeah, you know what? Any other outcome, I can't get on board with. You know, that's what we do here. We talk ourselves into it. And I love it because, you know, you can see the flow of it. But, let's go on to some. There's a couple teams in like the 26 to 32 range. I think the Bills and the Chiefs really stand out as teams that have more uncertainty at the wide receiver position. The Bills, obviously, right, after trading Stephon Diggs, you got Khalil Shakir, who's a solid slot guy, right? You got Curtis Samuel, who I think is a little underrated with his movement ability, right? I do think he's got some versatility, but I feel like you need that wide receiver one, right? And then if you're the Chiefs, Rashee Rice and the legal issues surrounding him, there's some uncertainty there. You did sign Hollywood Brown, so I think you have your speed guy, right? So they were a fit for Xavier Worthy for me for a little bit. I don't know if they get him just because that might be redundant a little bit for their skill sets, but who are some guys that you're pinpointing for the Bills and the Chiefs? Because those feel like two teams who can really dictate the wide receiver board with who they take in round one, assuming they do go with that. The Bills, it feels like they kind of have to, right? The Chiefs have a little more flexibility, but for the Bills, for instance, for me, you know, I look at what they lack with the size with that group, Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel and Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett, maybe A.D. Mitchell, if you feel good about the medical things, which we've heard it's that he's a type 1 diabetic, right? Which that's one of those things where, you know, there's some nuance that goes into it. But if you know that's what the issue is, right, if it's just that he's a diabetic and you know how to manage it, right, you have nutrition systems in place, I feel like these teams would have the resources to manage that if that's all it is, right? So that doesn't concern me as much if that's what it is. We don't know the full story, obviously, but A.D. Mitchell could be in the scenario for them. I think Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett, Coleman provides a little more of that speed on the vertical plane for Josh Allen, which I would really like with his arm. But I think Keon Coleman's a little bit more potent as a rack threat in the short range with his agility, right? I think Leggett's probably more of a vertical mover. And then you get the Chiefs, right? What do I think about for the Chiefs? Reliability is the word that comes to mind a lot for me. Ladd McConkey, Jalen Polk stands out as a potential option. I love his alignment versatility and how Andy Reid would be able to weaponize that early on. So those are a few names that stand out to me as potential late round one guys, right? But this wide receiver class, there's so many different permutations that could come off the board. So those two teams, Bills and Chiefs, who are the top receiver candidates for you?
I think they're both fighting over A.D. Mitchell, to be honest with you. I love A.D. Mitchell's ability to be able to create separation at the break point. There's his hip fluidity and just ability to seamlessly get in and out of breaks is pretty darn impressive. And it, for a guy that is his size, and, you know, we were just talking about Brian Thomas Jr., there's a lot of physical similarities between Thomas and A.D. Mitchell that I really think both project well. And Mitchell seems to be the guy that's more around that wide receiver 5 to wide receiver 7 range, depending on where you have him on your board. Leggett is a grown man. It's like, it feels like when he was listed 6'3", like 225 on South Carolina's website, he didn't have quite those measurables at the combine. I looked at his tape and went, damn, this guy is kind of like Josh Gordon if you had a rocket strapped to his back.
Yeah.
Like there's a ton of movement skills that I really like for Xavier Leggett. Also can play bully ball with the best of them at the catch point. And that is certainly, that feels like a much better fit for the Buffalo Bills because of the complement of options that you have currently with, you know, Shakir kind of being a slot specialist and yak threat. You know, Curtis Samuel can do some nice things, has some formation versatility, and you can even get him manufactured touches in the screen game as well. But they kind of need that physical profile X wide receiver that can operate outside. I believe Leggett has a better skill set separation wise than someone like Keon Coleman. So I believe I would prioritize Leggett for their needs for that roster. Because I actually want to see potentially Keon Coleman move to the big slot.
Yeah.
I know I kind of mentioned that to you before. I don't think that that's what the Bills really need. They've got Dalton Kincaid, and you've also very got Shakir, who works very well out of the slot. I kind of want to diversify my skill set. You kind of like a basketball team. Yeah. Like, I don't want to have a bunch of power forwards. Like, that's not, you can't have everybody play the four. So, you know, Leggett for the Bills, both A.D. Mitchell works for either Kansas City or Buffalo. A guy, though, and I know that we already kind of have that big slot, you know, yak threat in Rashee Rice for the Kansas City Chiefs, and that situation will play out here in the near future. You mentioned Jalen Polk and Ladd McConkey. You know, they have different-ish skill sets, of course, because, you know, hyper elite separator is the way that I describe Ladd McConkey.
Yeah.
You know, if I was on the clock,
it really is.
If I was on the clock, I would take Ladd McConkey. But Jalen Polk gives you a lot as a ace at the catch point. Whereas, you know, contested catch situations, Jalen Polk effortlessly makes catches away from his frame all the time, contested catches. Whereas I don't, that's probably the weakest aspect of Ladd McConkey's game. So it kind of depends on what you want. I would value McConkey's separation abilities a little bit more than Jalen Polk's, which I think works for Kansas City and what they need in that receiver room right now.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's a lot of trade-offs, right? Like McConkey is probably the better independent separator right now. But then you look at Polk and how Reed is, you know, how he excels at scheming opportunities to players, right? And kind of alleviating that independent pressure that might play in well. So, you know, it's varying molds, varying archetypes, and that's what makes this draft so fun. We got a couple more minutes here, so we'll try and wrap it up. But Derek, two questions I have for you. A team that we have not mentioned yet that has a lot riding on their round one pick that you are eager to see what they do, and then who's a surprise round one pick that you could see sneak into the first round. Who are your thoughts on those questions?
So a player that can sneak into round one type draft capital that maybe is kind of off of the board as of this very moment, I think TJ Tampa. Out of Iowa State. I really like TJ Tampa's game. Like, I think he's kind of a, I kind of think he's more of a long strider than he is, you know, super, super hyper twitch fast, but I really like his recovery speed. I think he's physical at the catch point and is very disruptive with his arms. Yeah. I see a lot of sound technical skills in his in his ability to be able to identify and react to route stems and even route combinations in zone coverage. So there's a lot that I really like about TJ Tampa's game. I actually think he can sneak into the end of the first round.
He's one of my guys, so I like that a lot. I think the coverage variability, I think he plays faster than his 40 time as well too. Mm-hmm. So 32 inch arms, former wide receiver. He's got those ball skills. He's physical and support. Yeah. I like him a lot. I think he could sneak in. And then what's the team that you're looking at that we haven't mentioned yet who you're eager to see what they do?
The Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
They've got a very young roster. Yep. I mean, you're like, what, they're the youngest roster from top to bottom to make the NFL postseason and in like the Super Bowl era or something of that nature.
They
like,
won a game too. They washed the Dallas Cowboys, right? You got Jordan Love coming into his own too.
Punked the Dallas Cowboys in their own building, who were a darn good football team at home at Jerry World. And they darn near, they had the 49ers on the ropes. You know, Brock Purdy and the boys came back and, you know, Jordan Love, they kind of imploded in the second half, but the flashes are certainly there, Ian, you know, but their needs along the offensive line, or do they go secondary? You know how high I am on Cooper DeJean.
Yeah.
If he's there, I'm adding him to that secondary. And I love that fit. But do they, you know, same thing could be said if Graham Barton somehow, I actually think there's a chance Graham Barton's picked in the top 20.
Yeah.
But, you know, do they invest in the interior of that offensive line? Of course, they lost David Bakhtiari this to, you know, he hasn't been on the field very much because he's been dealing with injuries. And I have a personal story with David Bakhtiari we could talk about another time. But anyway, you know, do they invest in that offensive line to kind of, you know, maximize this, you know, foundation that they're building around Jordan Love? I could see the Green Bay Packers doing that with their first round pick, but that's another team that has a lot of draft capital, as they always seem to have. And they're just going to keep filling the pipeline with young talent. And they've done a really, really, really bang up job, in recent drafts, because they've got themselves a lot of nice pieces.
Yeah, and they got the flexibility too, because even tackle isn't a pressing need for them. Like, they have Zach Tom, who's a very good right tackle. Rasheed Walker played pretty well at left tackle, so they don't have to pick a player there if they want to. I think the only glaring need on the roster is linebacker, right? Corner could be one, but Carrington Valentine played pretty well for a rookie last year too. So I think in general, you know, we saw Gutekunst was talking about what kind of safety would he want, and he would want one that's interchangeable with Xavier McKinney as that post safety. So Cooper DeJean's versatility could be a fun fit there. Although I think DeJean could go as high as 16 to the Seahawks. Him and Mike McDonald's defense, man.
Yeah.
That would be so fun. That would be one of the best fits that I can imagine. I think he's got all the versatility to play in that. But a couple teams that I'm looking forward to seeing. The Rams at number 19. They really accelerated their rebuild with their draft class last year. Obviously, Puka Nacua, but Kobe Turner as well. A few other pieces down the board. Matthew Stafford is playing very well. I think what they do at 19 can really help them stay competitive in the NFC West and kind of steamroll that too. And then the Lions at 29th overall. They made some moves. They traded for Carlton Davis, right? They still have the offense intact, right? Ben Johnson is there as the offensive coordinator. They got the receivers, right? They have Sam Laporta, Jared Goff. So they're pretty set to keep competing again. So what do you do at 29? If you can add a difference maker who falls to that point, that's a very fun add. And then a couple of players that I think could sneak in around one, Patrick Paul from Houston, more of an early day three guy for me, but I can see the upside with the tools and I can see NFL coaches maybe being taken by that. 6'7.5", 333 pounds, over 36 inch arms. The dude is a mauler. He's physical. Recovery athleticism is my big concern with him, but I do think there are enough tools to maybe compel a team into taking him. And then Marshawn Nealand from Western Michigan, 6'3", 270, 34 inch arms. That power profile is there. And after those first four edge rushers, Dallas Turner, Laiatu Latu, Jared Verse, Chop Robinson, there is a little bit of a drop off. So that if that fifth edge goes round one, I think Nealon could be that guy. So a few names to keep in mind, but that's all the time we have for you all on our PFN scouting preview podcast for the 2024 NFL draft. Thank you as always for listening, tuning in. We'll be back next week with a full recap podcast covering all the events through all 3 days. Until next time, peace out, and make sure you get your mock drafts in. Two more days, go to the MDS, get your mock drafts in, and see what kind of outcomes your team could enjoy in the 2024 NFL Draft. That's all for today. Thank you all. Peace out. Have a good one.